Good morning. It's good to see you again, and for all those that are visiting with us, we're glad you've come our way. We hope that you'll come and be with us again this evening at 5. And so, Mark, thank you for a great song service. This morning, I want to talk to you about the idea of our dedication to Christ, and this kind of goes along with what we started with Romans 12, talking about the idea of a transformation. How do you make transformation happen? Those types of things. And then we looked at, well, what are we transforming to? And we looked at the idea that we're trying to transform ourselves into slaves. We're not trying to transform ourselves into successful, whatever it may be, Christian, but instead that we are to be slaves unto Christ. Today is a little more difficult, or at least I think so, in the fact that as we read this passage again, that we have an example for us that has given us who we're to be or how we're to be. For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea. And all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. And they ate the same spiritual food. They all drank the same spiritual drink. For they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased, and they were laid low in the wilderness. And so as I go and I look at that, I mean, we're not talking about something we don't know about. We know about the plight of the Israelites and their escape from Egypt and all that goes on that way, and how they go through the Red Sea when the Egyptian army is after them, and we know all the things that are there. But when we think about the idea of transformation and the sense of taking or viewing our goal on a regular basis, that we were trying to do that and then some sort of movement and action toward my goal. That's what Christianity is about. And that we've seen that the goal has no acceptance in the world. The world doesn't even hear God. And so this is something for us to be doing, and that simple slavery, okay, simple slavery to what is right before God. I will be a slave to that. And that's when God has an acceptance of us. So, in the Old Testament, when we start looking at things and I look at that idea and I look at that transformation, the Old Testament was given to us, you know, for our learning, and the Israelites show us many of the failures when it comes to spiritual things. And so, I just want us to see that our scriptural reading points out a conclusion that we need to heed. And so I want to go back with you for just a moment, and I want to take a look at a couple of little things, and even though it's not all that difficult here, that in this one passage, it's a fact, okay, that the Israelites were under the cloud and that they passed through the sea. There's not an Israelite that was with them at the time that didn't know what happened. They got to see the cloud every day. They got to have the pillar of light or fire at night. They have the presence of God with them in a visible and real way. They are Israelites. You are going to be my chosen people. You are the nation that I promised to Abraham. You are all the things that have led up to this moment. And I am here with you. Not only am I here, but look what I can do. And we have the 10 plagues that got them released from Egypt. We've got the Red Sea that they were baptized in the sea because they go into it and under. And then they arise together. They're baptized into Moses' covenant, if you want to call it that. I don't. It's God's covenant. But now it's been given a form to it. And the cloud and the fire and the sea made us one. And I hope you see that the Israelites are one nation because of what they endured. Okay. Then as they continued on, they all ate the same spiritual food. the manna that comes every morning, and they go to gather that manna, and they eat that food. And there is no doubt, there is no doubt whether you were there or whether you were not, that in a desert, when food falls from the sky, it's just waiting on you when you get up, who's in control here? I think I understand. Okay, God is ever present. And then the water, and we know about, oh, we came out here to die of thirst, and Moses ends up doing what God tells him to do and striking the rock, and water comes forth. And as I look at those things, and I look at these things and the sea and the manna and then the water. By the way, I happen to choose this particular picture because from what I understand, that the Israelites, when they come out of Egypt, are no less than 1.2 million to 1.8 million, maybe even 2 million people. And it was no trickle of water, which is what most pictures have this little trickle coming out, like, oh, here, come fill your glass, and all 2 million of you, come on. No, it had to be gushing water that comes forth. And so as they talk about all of that, you know, that is this a symbol? That you're standing in the middle of a desert and you have food that comes and just appears, and that you have water when there is no water? It's a desert. The presence of the cloud, the presence of the fire, all those good things that are going on. And so it says that they all drank the same thing, and it was all from the spiritual rock, okay, and the rock was Christ. Now, I don't know how much time y'all spend thinking about things that don't make sense sometimes. This one doesn't make sense. Jesus is not on the scene when all this is going on, as far as they know. We know that he is announced in the New Testament to us. We know that the Spirit of God was there and that he has moved many times. We know from New Testament teaching that it was Jesus that put the world together and does all the things. He is the one that created. It was all made by him and for him. We know that he is the one that has so much to do with things. And yet in this particular passage, New Testament, it says that the rock that followed them is Christ. So, I want to tell you how far this goes. There's a picture on the internet. You can go to Google Images, and they've got a rock that's dragging itself through the sand as if we got a rock with no legs moving itself, and I assume that was supposed to be Christ. Now, when you go to imagining, you can imagine anything you want to imagine. I don't think that's what this is talking about. That the rock that was Christ is the rock that was promised to Abraham, that through your seed all the families of the earth will be blessed. It is looking for the Messiah, that this is just a stepping stone toward where we're really going, and that Christ is with you. That the point of what was behind and being told to you about where we're going and what we're going to do is all right here, and this story becomes one. And if you don't understand that, then you don't understand what this is about. And of course they didn't. They were being reminded by the cloud and the fire, probably because they had to. They were being fed in the manner in which it was being done, but probably because they had to. These people had been idolaters now in a land of idolatry for a long time, and now here they are, and they've been saved by the Red Sea. They've had all the things going on, and we recognize it, that the spiritual leadership comes from Jesus Christ. Now I say that, how can that be in the Old Testament? How can that be so? Because there's only going to be one that is human the way God wanted us to be. that ever lived on this earth. And that's Jesus. Our physical provisions come from Him. And they are united together by the things that they've done. And so we see it. So then this goes on in verse 6 to make this statement. So now these things happened as examples for us, so that we would not crave evil things as they also craved. Do not be idolaters, as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and stood up to play. Nor let us act immorally, as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in one day. Nor let us try the Lord, as some of them did, as they were destroyed by the serpents. Nor grumble, as some of them did, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now, these things happened to them as an example, and they were written for our instruction, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall, or that he does not fall. No temptation has overtaken you, but what is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with temptation will provide the way of escape also, so that you'll be able to endure it. All right, so it makes the statement that they craved evil things. And so you might want to take the idea of the golden calf from Exodus 32 and tell that story and say, okay, they went backward instead of forward. As Tom used the fiery serpents, that was another one that I had from Numbers 21, where they would rebel against God. When Korah led Israel to grumble in Numbers 16, and he and his household and all of his followers are swallowed up by the ground and it closed up over them. Can you imagine what the people that were left had to say? Those things happened that we might learn a lesson. And that's the whole point of it. First of all, what is the power of God? What is He capable of? What can He do? And I'm telling you, if He wants to just drop you in a hole and cover you back over, He could do that. If He wants to end everything, He can do that. That the Corinthians were following the ways of the Israelites because they wanted to continue to worship idols. You see, here's a city that was given to idols, and they worshiped in many, many different ways, and many of them were immoral and improper, and all the things that were going on. And what it is it's really being contrasted to the idea that man wants to worship the way I want to worship, and not according to what I've been told. And so the warning comes in verse 12, therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. How can you be taken? You know, men probably look at things like that in the fact that, I guess, you know, I had interest back in the days when boxing was on TV a lot, and we'd watch boxers, and now it's more martial arts and some of those kinds of things, and we watch how people fight and the sophistication of that fighting. And we see how by throwing a punch, you leave yourself open for one to come back. And so that in boxing, there's the what we would consider the puncher, and then one that is the counter puncher. He'll let you take a swing first and then hit you when you leave your opening. There are all sorts of things that go this way. If I want to make this analogy and I want us to understand that it really has to do with life and who we are, then I can create a situation of who I'm going to be, take actions and think that I am strong when I'm not so strong because I have tons of weakness. That as I extend myself in that direction, I leave myself open in another direction. And those things, and he says, you be careful. Take heed that you think you're standing when you fall. Now, why is that? because we get caught up. I have the knowledge of God. I practice something. I've been practicing something for years. I am comfortable with who I am. I'm all that it needs to be, and all that and more. But if you don't look at yourself from the standpoint of, do I have an issue that is a weakness where Satan can get me? If I have missed thinking of some sort, if I have can be taken by a false doctrine, a false way, a false person. Do you understand? You see, there is no thought in the passage that we've been reading here. There's no thought at all about, oh, I'm sorry, you thought wrong. It was open the ground, close it back up. 23,000 died today. If you don't look at the standard, you're going to die. We must learn the lesson. You see, yet he says that there's no temptation that is too great for you. We have that today, that I'm overwhelmed is a word that we hear on a regular basis. I'm overwhelmed by the things of life, and that I can't handle myself. I can't handle this situation. I just don't know what I'm going to do. Yet the Lord says something else. Trust in me. I will be with you. He provides a way of escape, and your endurance is expected. Our dedication to these things is expected. And so most of them were not pleasing to God. It says most of them were not pleasing to God. Does that not send a little shiver through us? That the Corinthians were being charged with declaring God but not following Him. And God laid that the unbelievers low in the wilderness, meaning that they died there outside the promised land. And that is what the promise is to us, is that if you will not follow me, if you will not follow my son, if you will not be what you should be, if you will not actively press toward that goal, then you will be left in the wilderness. So when I take that and I make the jump to modern day Christianity, I'm asking, what's the point? See, we can declare ourselves followers of God while we pursue the things that God does not approve of. And then what do you think the result of that's going to be? Consider our response to knowing that the all-powerful God who knows all things is looking at me. I want you to give that one just a little bit of thought. The God of heaven who knows all things, He knows if a sparrow hits the ground, and He knows what's in your heart and what you think and all that there is about you. You can hide nothing from Him, and He's looking at you. I laugh about, I'm not laughing at this. This scares me. But I laugh at it from the standpoint of, I remember a few times in my childhood when I was caught literally kind of with your hand in the cookie jar. And you can't deny what you are doing. You're caught. And it was a very uncomfortable feeling. And so I said, I wanted a cookie. We understand that, but we told you you couldn't have one, didn't we? Yes. And whatever came, I deserved. Do you think you can hide your heart from God? Do you think that you can continue to be ugly, that you can continue to be covetous, you can continue to all the things that God says don't be and do? Do you think you can do that and Him not know it? Can I deny my desire for another God to God, to the true God? You see, I can't. He knows. He knows. Can I love God and spurn God out of the same mouth? And you see another point. But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. And from the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be. Does a fountain send from the same opening both fresh water and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh. No. Does my mouth say then vile things against God? Not saying them against God, because you see, that's not how we do it. We say them against men. We say them against situations. We say them against things that this ought not to be, and we blame God when God is not the source of that. Okay. Do you understand that it's my heart that would do that? James 4, 8, 9 says, draw near to God and He will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Here's where the problem is. Here's where the issue was with both the Israelites as they were coming through the wilderness and with us. We want it where it's both ways. I want to have my cake and I want to eat it too. I want no change and I don't want any hardship. And I want to be able to be saved and be all that I should be without having to worry, think, or do anything. It's not that way. I have to set a goal, dedicate myself toward it, and take a step every day stepping toward my goal. So I ask you about your dedication. I ask you about the idea of where you want to be and what you want to do. And I ask it more, maybe more to some of us that are older, because it's easy to get lost in where we're going or thinking that we're getting there when we're not, telling us ourselves that I'm better now than I used to be when I've got much to work on. Who are you? And only you can answer. And so I want us to leave this place today thinking about ourselves. And in thinking, in our word, and then in our action, and then if I need to clean myself, do it. And if that's repentance at home, on your knees, praying to God to forgive you for what you've been and done, then do that. If it's something where you've done it publicly, then you need to do that here, and let us know you're okay. If you've never named the name of Christ, what are you waiting for? Think on these things. And if we can help you, won't you come as we stand and sing?